Chapter 5. Delta looks at the ships beneath her. They carry the same troops that razed Greyspot 3, the ones that turned the people living there to the bones in her hands. She looks at Alpha's palace in the wake of its just-launched volley of missiles. Distantly, she feels their tiny impacts. Deep inside her, the misery grows until it becomes too much to contain. Her mouth opens in song. The air shakes with it. Nearby clouds weep, and below, waves pause, collapsing in on themselves. Without being ordered by their commanders, the pilots of each of the ships cut their engines. Everything stops, but Delta is not done. She turns her gaze to the sky, singing out as her brother has done, connecting with a distant orbiting body. But her order is different. The satellite glimmers one final time and is gone. Silver wings carry her over the top of the battlements, soldiers gasping at the sight despite themselves, awestruck. She ignores them, diving into the courtyard where Alpha is emerging, followed quickly by Beta, Epsilon, Theta, and Eta. He glances past her as she lands, sky-blue eyes darkening with rage. As that stare turns on her, she feels his displeasure, like fists pushing at her chest. Bracing herself, Delta raises her hands, opens them so that they can all see the charred, misshapen bones in one and the small skull in the other.
"How did it come to this?"
Three volleys have come, each a rain of singing missiles. Vesper waits to see if there will be a fourth. Around her, the crews of the first ships swarm over their decks, putting out fires, plugging holes, pumping out unwanted water. The interlude of peace continues, extending well beyond the rhythm of the previous attacks. An eye closes, and she puts the sword away. Two of the nine ships escorting the commander's rest have been sunk, another five damaged and unable to submerge. The Wavemaker has sustained hits to one of its engines, slowing it substantially. Unlike conflict on land, there are no other scars of battle visible. If anything, the water is calmer than before. Vesper takes a drink to soothe her throat. Use of the malice has left it raw, and it complains each time she speaks. She watches in silence as her knights of the Order of the Broken Blades tip one of their number into the sea. There is time to see the shrapnel wound, to appreciate the misfortune, before the sea claims the body. A gloom falls across her people. They are used to death and struggle, but they are not used to this. One of them raises a hand.
"Yes." "That attack, it came from the Empire."
It isn't phrased as a question, but Vesper answers it anyway.
"Yes, and it was directed by Alpha of the Seven."
Dismay does not sit well on the usually stoic faces. Eventually, one of the older knights says,
"If the Seven wish us dead, should we not oblige them?"
"No," replies Vesper. "It's not that simple. Alpha started the attack, but the sword, Gamma's sword, protected us, and another of the Seven stopped it."
"But the Seven speak as one. What does this mean?"
"It means they don't speak as one. Perhaps they never have."
Another knight speaks, full of despair, though his courage has never failed before.
"What will we do?"
An eye flicks open at Vesper's shoulder, and her own widen with anger.
"What will we do? What will we do? We've lived our whole lives without the Seven up till now. Gamma helped us before, and she's still helping us now. We survived the usurper and the yearning without them. We've just started making sense of everything, and I'm not going to stop now.
She looks at the crippled ships around her, and her scowl only deepens.
Damn Alpha! How dare he attack the people who faced it all alone while he wept in the dark?
The knights don't answer, shocked by Vesper's defiance. They are utterly loyal to her, but they are also loyal to the Seven. Up till now, they believed these loyalties to be one and the same. There is a whisper that reaches Vesper's ears.
We're not worthy. We have failed them. We have broken our oaths.
No!
Replies Vesper, her voice cracking.
No! Don't you see? They have failed us, but we need to keep going. If we don't, then thousands of people are going to die. Can you do that? Will you stand with me?
She looks at them. One by one they meet her eyes, nod. She nods back, relieved, proud. As she returns to Samael, she notices how unsteady he is on his feet, one hand pressed against the side of his battered helmet.
Are you all right?
Yes, he replies.
Vesper suspects that there is a longer and more complex answer, but doesn't press for one. Scout whines nearby, lying flat on his belly, paws over his head.
And him?
He'll recover.
Glad to hear it. Have you seen my goat anywhere?
Samael points down. Tucked between his legs and the wheel of the boat is the buck. Only an act of desperate contortion has enabled his large frame to fit within such a small space. The buck's head sticks through a gap in the bottom of the wheel, the angle awkward.
There you are. Now, just stay still a moment, and...
She trails off, her attention taken by the first. It moves towards her in leaps, launching from the deck of one ship to land on the next, an armoured flea.
Don't worry,
she says to the buck.
I'll come back.
By the time she has stood up, the first is landing in front of her.
There is conflict among the Seven. Do you perceive it?
I do,
she replies.
We should leave before it resolves.
Agreed.
She checks in with Samael for confirmation.
We're ready. Are you?
Our mobility has suffered. If they pursue again, they will catch us easily.
Then we've got no time to lose.
The first returns to its ships. Samael goes to the wheel, and Vesper goes back to trying to liberate the buck. Moments later, engines stir in the still water, and eight ships continue their journey. Though not as impressive as Alpha's Sky Palace, the armada sailing beneath it is comprised of the Empire's finest ships. Greatest of these is their flagship, Resolution. Functioning as a launch station, command ship, and artillery platform, Resolution would appear massive if not sailing in the shadow of something greater. The bridge is raised above the main deck on an articulated mast of steel, S-shaped, like a dragon's head drawing back to breathe fire. Standing within is the Knight Commander, highest military authority in the Empire of the Winged Eye. Around him are officers, crew, all poised at their stations, all waiting for him to say something. But for once, he has nothing to say. Knight Commander, says one of his officers. The bearer and the first's ships are moving away from us. They consult their screens before adding, they are two down. He turns toward the officer. Only two? Confirmed, sir. Two down. Unlike his predecessor, the Knight Commander has seen nothing of the battlefield during his tenure. He is, therefore, unduly troubled by the way simple things are rarely as plain as they appear. The missiles, for example, should have wiped out the enemy entirely. But the failure of missiles to live up to expectations is the least of his worries. Knight Commander, they are still moving.
Understood,
he replies, irritated at the needless update and the nerves that prompted it.
Inform me if this changes.
He clasps his hands behind his back and checks the impulse to pace. He, of all people, must appear calm. Alpha's orders are clear. Their purpose is to purge the world with fire and song. They are to become legend, immortalized in canon for future generations. Or so he thought. Delta's order was equally clear. Stop. In the absence of specifics, they are forced to err on the side of caution. They have stopped their pursuit, powered down their engines. Now there is nothing to do but wait. The Knight Commander looks up. Beyond the metal above his head, somewhere in the floating sky palace, the seven are together, and, as far as he can tell, they are arguing. The thought is ludicrous, going against everything he was taught, from his earliest days in his choir through to his squire training, even the many lectures received from obeisance. For the first time in his life, the Knight Commander feels the bedrock of his certainty crack and begin to crumble. In the courtyard of Alpha's Sky Palace, two essences rage back and forth, a pair of storm fronts colliding, colliding again. Delta's and Alpha's argument is elemental, made up of words, will, and song. For the humans unfortunate enough to witness the display, it is too much. Blood runs from ears overwhelmed with furious song. Pupils gape wide, blown forever. They are not dead, but there is little of life left in them. Others distributed throughout the palace are merely driven to their knees in terror. Some weep, some cover their faces, others pray, enacting the rite of mercy. All responses are equally irrelevant. Beta of the Seven watches, aghast, while Epsilon, Theta, and Eta simply wait as they have always waited. The bones that Delta brought with her from Greyspot 3 have been destroyed. Too fragile to be exposed to such energies, they have been reduced to ashes that swirl briefly about the two immortals to be scattered, forgotten. She came with a question, and it has been answered. This leads to more questions, each a stab in the eye, and more answers, like slaps across the face, coming faster and faster, rising in volume and anger until even Beta looks away. Abruptly it ends, with Alpha's hand on Delta's throat. At the contact, something in her seems to break, and her eyes half close, body flopping, going slack. Alpha does not let her fall, not yet. His anger is not done. He walks up winding stairs to the battlements, dragging Delta after him, her heels ringing against each step. Beta follows, and after a pause, Epsilon, Theta, and Eta do the same. Past bowed heads and trembling bodies, Alpha goes, ignoring all. Displeasure radiates from him in waves, driving people from his path like iron filings from a magnet, flipped the wrong way. Raising Delta over the edge, he draws his sword. Its eye is open, glaring balefully at Delta as she dangles, a puppet, stringless. When Alpha draws back the weapon, the light around it sparks so brightly that the blade turns black within it. And then Beta is at his side, one hand on his wrist. Alpha looks down. Their eyes meet. 1049 years ago. Masasi lets the slab take the weight of her body, groaning with pleasure as it lowers her into the vat. Nutri-fluid oozes between toes and into armpits, thickening at the base of her neck and the points along her spine, supporting, warming. Damage sustained long ago has led to a regimen of treatments. Injections, tablets, and organ stimulation are all daily routines, some to manage the pain, others to keep her alert. Such things have taken their toll, however. Her hair is gone, and her nails have fallen out. The metal studs she used to plug old wounds were not her best work, a rushed solution, plaguing her with regular inflammation and infection. For years she has endured such things, a small price to pay for the safety of the world. No longer. At last she is able to rest. Alpha is here now, and he is more than able to run the Empire, giving her a well-earned break. She tries to remember the last time she felt this relaxed and finds she cannot. The Nutri-fluid has eased her physical aches, and Alpha has taken away the awful responsibility. It may have cost her the best years of her life, but she has done it. Hours pass, happy dozing punctuated with periods of self-satisfied reflection. Normally, her quick mind would be getting bored, but she feels no need to move. Perhaps this is part of getting old, taking pleasure in the smaller things. Perhaps it is just that she is tired. For once, Masasi feels no desire to dig deeper. Understanding is not necessary. She could lie here until the end of time. Her slumber is disturbed by knocking, insistent, on the side of the vat. Masasi wakes unwillingly. It is Piece 15, one of the best of the new generation. Masasi only has to glance at the girl's essence to know that something serious is going on. A bad-tempered command sets the slab into motion, raising her from the vat into colder, more miserable air.
What is it?
Piece 15 bows, making the sign of the eye.
It's Alpha.
She forces herself upright, ignoring her protesting back.
Well, don't just stand there. Help me up.
Masasi is quickly wrapped in a self-sealing robe and ushered out of the chamber. She sees the fear in the girl, and some of it begins to leach into her.
What's happened to Alpha?
A flurry of possibilities already runs through her mind. Has her beautiful creation broken after a fall, a miscalculation on her part allowing the essence to slowly leak from him? Or perhaps she has failed to calibrate his wings properly? They worked well at low altitude, but what if he has gone higher, trusting to her designs? What if she has made another mistake, as she did with the breach? Piece 15 shakes her head.
Nothing's happened to him, Your Imperial Majesty. I have come to ask you to stop him.
The relaxed feelings have evaporated, and Masasi feels a familiar dread return.
Show me.
Along corridors and through transport chutes they go, rushed along by automated platforms and assisted walkways until they reach a set of doors that lead to a comms tower. At Masasi's approach, the doors open, revealing the full extent of her failure. Four bodies litter the room, utterly broken. A fifth person makes muffled noises, his skull stuck between the wall and Alpha's hand. Unprepared for the sight, Masasi stops to stare for a moment. In that moment, Alpha squeezes and blood streaks stark red against silver skin. Too late, her lips move.
What is this?
Alpha turns, his eyes lightening with love.
Creator!
He strides over the bodies towards her, opening his arms. Masasi raises her hands, warding him off.
I said, what is this?
He stops, arms still open, while Masasi looks into his essence. It is easier to read than most, brighter, purer, and he makes no effort to hide from her. The first man died because the calculations he presented Alpha with were imperfect, a reduction of 0.3 required to balance it again. The second died because he dared to judge Alpha's action monstrous, which, in Alpha's mind, was a suggestion he had made a mistake. This was, of course, a criticism of his creator as much as himself, and he could not allow such words to stand. The third and fourth died for much the same reasons as the second, and the fifth had been unable to cope with what he saw. His essence was showing signs of fracture, and Alpha had decided it best to terminate him immediately to avoid the danger of the man cracking in an unsupervised space. Replacements are already being summoned. Within the hour, the mess will be cleaned away and perfection restored. Masasi finds no concern for any other ramifications of these actions, and no regret over the deaths. For Alpha lacks the capacity for regret, having been created without any. He is perfect, and he expects perfection in all things. He can neither understand nor tolerate anything that fails to meet those expectations. She sees a new future for the Empire when she is gone. One where Alpha slowly destroys it from the inside. She feels a slight sympathy. Many a time have the incompetencies of her fellows driven her to break things. But no, this will not do. Alpha's role is to lead the Empire, to watch over it. It appears that he will need some help. Masasi turns from the room, and Alpha follows without the need to ask. They go back to her workshop, and Masasi starts on a new project. She is grateful that Alpha is there to assist, making matters easier. Even so, she struggles. Where before, with Alpha's creation, she aimed for an ideal, this time she is more restrained. The body they craft is grand, more than human, but it is not quite so large. She still gives it wings, however. The new creation is designed to be a balance for Alpha. Where he is single-minded, ruthless, and exacting, she will make someone more cautious, who thinks about the bigger picture, who considers the details. If Alpha charges headlong into battle with what's coming, then he will not be alone. There will be another there to watch his back and keep him safe. She crafts a second great sword, and it is lighter than Alpha's, quicker. When the time comes to infuse the body and the sword with essence, she tries to capture the spirit of being an engineer, remembering that it is this training that has saved her in the darkest times. She tries to make him careful, thoughtful, analytical, logical, like her on her calm days. Essence flows from the iris in her palm and into the body and the sword, creating life, diminishing hers. She sways, but before she can fall, Alpha catches her, taking her weight. She feels his love around her like a physical thing. In front of them, Beta is born. Where Alpha's eyes are the blue of a clear sky, Beta's are the blue-black of night. Masasi is the first thing that Beta sees, and she feels his love for her just as she feels Alpha's. Gentler, but no less powerful. She pats one of the silver hands supporting her.
Alpha, this is your brother.
Alpha tilts his head down. Beta tilts his up. Their eyes meet.